You call to order the House Revenue Committee meeting and welcome everybody here this morning. We have two bills up for work today, and we'll take them in reverse order because Representative Butler is here to testify on House Bill 2298. So, under the rule, must be present to win. We'll go first with your bill. Manson, if you would please give us the staff summary.
Okay, Mr. Chair, members of the committee, House Bill 2298 comes to us via the Committee on Trade and Economic Development, and it basically modifies certain definitions for the small city tax expenditure, if you will, even the unemployment rate and the county per capita income requirements, population number requirements, and so on. It tries to expand the definition to allow for a larger number of cities to be qualified. The bill have gone through several amendments in the Committee on Trade and Economic Development, and teaches us now with no fiscal impact. However, we're still working on both the revenue impact, because it will have the components of having two, property tax and income tax. However, I also looked at this in the tax expenditure report, and it seems to be that it's an expenditure that not too many cities or businesses are taking advantage of, so we're not expecting a big one to come out.
All right. Representative Butler, welcome back.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Tom Butler from House District 60. But, Mr. Chair, there's a person far more important back on this side of the dais than am I, in addition to some of those folks back in the dais here, and a young lady I met in the back of the room by the name of Shetterly.
Yes, that would be her shrinking in the chair by the... in the corner there. Thank you, Tom.
You bet. I'm impressed. I'm impressed, Mr. Chair, that she would come and participate today, and appreciate that involvement.
Thank you.
Members of the Revenue Committee, as I mentioned, Tom Butler from House District 60, down where the cattle grow but the people don't, for some reason. eat more beef. That's what the hat says. In House District 60, we continue to have difficulty trying to maintain jobs and our economy. And about the last thing we've got after the loss of our natural resource industry and the other jobs, including the 61 positions in the OYA, which is the equivalent of 8,755 jobs in Portland lost in one industry. So if you lost that many in Portland, I would guess there'd probably be about 80 legislators laying in front of the moving vans. But nobody laid in front of the moving vans as they pulled those jobs out of Harney County. And so I'm wearing the Eat More Beef cap because that's basically all I've got left there. And we need to support the beef industry. However, I'd love to see more industry move back into Harney County. And as a result of that, I bring you the A-engrossed House Bill 2298, which was passed last session with some parameters and definitions to it. And we were unable, as Madison has indicated, we were unable to get the necessary folks to come to small cities and distressed communities. And what this did was it defined what those distressed communities looked like in terms of unemployment, high unemployment, and low per capita wages. And then it also set the city size, which was at 10,000, and now maybe cities up to 15,000, because we do have cities in distress that are over 10,000 but under 15,000. And it also gives additional latitude to the Department of Economic Development to go ahead and certify those folks in there for a little bit longer period of time. And so what this does is that it broadens the latitude and then gives them additional time to work with new businesses. This is for new to Oregon industries that will locate in these distressed communities. This does not mean that a business can be in Portland or in metropolitan Oregon and move out of metropolitan Oregon and qualify to move to some other portion of Oregon and make their income tax on that net profits of the business income tax free. As I was mentioning to Paul Warner of Legislative Revenue a little bit earlier, we're having a difficult time trying to encourage people to come to rural Oregon, particularly with all of the regulation that we have in Oregon. But we do want to try and attract any of those folks that we possibly can. So what this does is the final thing that it did that had any kind of concern for other folks was that it reduced the number of employees down to five. If they would employ five or more at the prescribed wage, which is 150% of the median wage, or 100% of the median wage if they're willing to provide 100% of the insurance requirements that are necessary, then these folks would qualify. The concern was that folks may want to move to Oregon and bring their businesses to these rural areas. And as I was visiting with Paul, many times businesses in the first number of years of startup will not have a profit. And so to have the net income of the business, this is not the wages, but the net income of the business after the wages have been paid, have that income tax free is not an attraction if they do not anticipate large incomes during the first 10 years, and they have to requalify each year anyway. And finally, this bill does continue to prescribe that anyone that's moving into these communities must make a long-term investment and commitment to property, plant, and equipment. And we did this because that we felt that it was very necessary to have the property tax revenues and the investment in the community to make sure these folks stayed in the community for some period of time. Thus, you would have enhanced and increased property taxes if they build a building or if they lease and do the necessary improvements to lease facilities, leasehold improvements, then that would qualify, assuming that the Oregon Economic Development Commission identifies that those commitments to the physical plant are over or 10 years or more in duration and value. So with that, I still have a difficulty. There is no fiscal on this that I'm aware of as a result of the fact that this provides for a fee for the OECD to continue to certify these businesses for first up investments and for all renewals. And we put that fee that it had a maximum on it, but it could be at a minimum. In other words, that if the OECD had a list of businesses already that could move into a community, there'd be no reason to charge them in order to land in that particular community. And then finally, with regard to a revenue possibility of a revenue cost to the state, it did not have a revenue cost last session. And making it available to smaller businesses, the only potential is that those folks that were going to land in Oregon and start their businesses anyway could now do so with a smaller type operation in a larger type city, as large as 15,000 in that community or those communities, which would qualify. But again, and I think within your packets you will see that this particular bill, as engrossed, qualifies for a lot of very small communities. It does not qualify for larger communities. I just pick out a few of those for your. It would qualify for Heppner and Hines, Ione, Aragon, Jordan Valley, Lakeview, the town of Lakeview, also Paisley in that county, Mount Vernon and Rufus and Seneca and Vail and Willow, Wasco. Those are the kinds of towns that we're trying to encourage. Those towns that have high unemployment, consistently high unemployment with very low per capita wages, are where we're attempting to try and draw some businesses into. With that, Mr. Chair and members of the committee, I just invite any questions.
All right, other questions for Representative Butler? By the way, I just realized I should mention I got a note that Representative Barnhart had his appendix out on Saturday.
Oh, wow.
And is recuperating from that. So I looked down at the end of the desk and was expecting to see a handout, and I realized it wasn't there, and that's where he is. So as I said to Senator Courtney last fall, I can feel his pain. Anyway, Representative Barnhart, if you're listening to us on the internet, we wish you well and turn it off.
Certainly be a reason not to be here today.
Yeah. I had a question.
Is there a voluntary way to do that, Mr. Chair?
Voluntary way. I had a question, you know, about the revenue impact. As I recall from this last session, and I think what I'm hearing this session, there's no current revenue being foregone under this because this only applies to new business ventures coming into the state. Is that right?
Mr. Chair, yes, that's correct. They make application to the OECD. Then what happens is that once the OECD has signed them off, then they also have to have sign-offs by the city and the county. And in this instance, if they're in a port district, they have to have sign off in the port district. The issue is to make absolutely certain that what they do is not conflicting with other businesses. They don't want to try and attract businesses which would unfairly compete with those businesses which are already within the city, county, or port district.
If you would, maybe just touch on the port. We've added port. Port mm-hmm. wasn't in last time. What's the thinking there?
Yes, Mr. Chair. We found a couple of things that were unique to the bill last session. Lakeview is a county, or Lake County and Lakeview community, is a community with a lot of natural resources, includes some diatomaceous earth there. And there was a tremendous potential for a firm to actually move in and utilize some of the diatomite and some of those kinds of things. We found that, and the original bill was to try and encourage people to locate within city limits, but we found that many small towns had their urban growth areas outside the city limits, but were, and these are this true of the old mill towns, which Lakeview is, had their all of the public services out in that urban growth area. And so what we found was, by limiting it strictly to city limits, that the issue was to try and make sure that we didn't encourage anyone to come in that wasn't going to be utilizing the necessary infrastructure of the city, that is the water and the sewer and other infrastructure that was already in place. So what we did was, early on, we found that that was true of both Lakeview and of some other small communities, and we found that it was true of the port districts, that the ports sometimes have their all services available, but are sometimes not in the city limit. And so that's why you see the definition of ports added here, and why then you see within the urban growth boundaries included. Again, we did not, and this was something the Thousand Friends were concerned about. They didn't want to encourage folks to move into a community and start using services that weren't in existence, so that is provide for their own septic and water and those kinds of things. So what we've done is we've expanded that to try and meet the spirit of the utilization of that infrastructure, but that it could be in the urban growth boundary and in a port district which has all of those services available.
Representative Virchow.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Tom, I have a question for you. There is this percentage, unemployment percentage, in relationship to the state, and we have run into a problem with American Bridge, which is a pretty serious problem for us. If you are able to bring in one business, which makes your unemployment rate now come down, and of course we didn't anticipate that the states would raise, you know, go up as high. Does this take care of that problem? I'm a little concerned that you'd run into the same problem that we've run into in Coos County.
Mr. Chair, Representative Verger, let me say this with regard to each county, that this is based upon a county-by-county unemployment rate. And what we have found is that in some of these small communities, and it's a county-wide unemployment rate, and so we need to be very cognizant of Coos and these other counties that have somewhat of a long-term unemployment problem. What happens is that we'll find that the unemployment rate will drop, not because that there's a lot more jobs in the county, but because people are moving out. And so what happens is that this is an attempt to try and give a larger window and a longer period of time for those counties that would be reporting high unemployment for any one, being in the bottom third of the counties that are reporting, for any 1 month during a period of time, to as long as their unemployment, or as long as their per capita income was down for the full year, because that's a figure that's reported only annually, is the per capita income. That's different than the annual income and the other kinds of incomes that we use, because it's more directed towards those small communities that have larger families. And the issue is, we do want to encourage those families to stay in the communities because we have the school issues.
Right.
So this does not specifically address those places where there will be a quick upspike in the employment in the county and a reduction in the unemployment because people have moved out. But then as that begins to settle out, we're finding that, that unemployment will continue to, for those folks that come back and seek those jobs in the communities, that their unemployment rate will continue to be fairly high. So it, it doesn't address it specifically, Representative Verger, but it, the attempt is to give a larger window to the OECD to say, wait a minute, it did qualify during this period of time before those folks came to town, so they would still qualify under a longer window to bring another business into town. Again, it couldn't compete against that business which you've already brought in.
Thank you.
Other questions? I had one more, I guess. You've also, I see we've also added reconstruction and modification to the activities. I guess that would qualify. Is this assuming that someone is moving into an existing facility and they're going to renovate that so it doesn't require just ground up construction?
Excellent question, Mr. Chair. I was very concerned about that originally because I thought that what was being attempted there was to try and encourage folks that were already in existence to go ahead and expand. And that is not what this bill is about. This is for folks to move in. But the reconstruction certainly qualifies because it still has to be new to Oregon business that is moving into the community. We didn't want to, and that's why I mentioned the leasehold improvements do qualify. If they will go into an existing facility and make a reconstruction and an expansion in that existing facility, again, with property, plant, and equipment and those leasehold improvements, which have a value, and again, that's up to the OECD to determine when they look at it to see that the improvement appears to have a life of 10 years or more, and that's the requirement, that they make a long-term commitment to the community, that and that should add to the tax base, the property tax base, but that they need to be making that long-term commitment, and reconstruction does qualify and remodeling would qualify as that as a portion of that commitment to the community.
All right. Any other questions? I guess one last one I think I understood from Mazin. Were we, did we draw this so tightly, or are things just in such that they are in the parts of the state to which this would qualify that nobody has applied to use it yet?
Mr. Chair, I'm disappointed to tell you, but at the same time happy that we've got the opportunity to come in and modify it. Disappointed to tell you that we haven't been able to attract the businesses to rural Oregon and these distressed communities, but we believe that by, number one, reducing the number of jobs that have to be created to 5 new jobs in the community, and by allowing this for communities up to 15,000, and then by allowing the additional window of time that OECD has to come in and qualify and get all the signatures and write up. Originally it was set up so they had this about 30 days to do all of this, and it just isn't enough time. So this gives them the rulemaking latitude to go ahead and say, wait a minute, this is a job, this is a certain small business that wants to come to Oregon. It really doesn't fit in Rufus, but it might fit in Lakeview, and be able then to resample that business and make sure that they could use the. And it's a nice airport. Let me just pitch this out. We've got great airports in some of these communities because they are so remote. Burns and Lakeview have two of the World War II first-class airports that exist in the state of Oregon and rural Oregon. And we want those folks to come in and use that. But we just have to redirect them. And then the other problem that we had was that those folks that did want to originally identify Oregon as a place to bring new business, and we did have some real interest in Lakeview, found out that we couldn't because it wasn't in the city limits, even though it had all city services.
Mr. Chair.
Yes, Representative Pence.
Thank you. This issue has come up before on other similar issues, Representative, and it goes to using employment as one of the factors. And sometimes there are facilities like the storage units, Shurgard storage units, where they can come in. They don't necessarily employ many people, sometimes only one or two or three, yet you know, they would qualify for this, and that's not exactly what you're looking for in these kinds of things. And I've seen this issue come up, not on this bill, but I was just wondering if there's some way to get around that.
Mr. Chair, Representative Hass, I appreciate that comment because, as I mentioned last session, when this bill originally passed, that I would be chagrined if anybody came in and really took a disadvantage of the bill to make it something that it really wasn't. And unless they employ, under this bill, 5 full-time employees, in the community at 150% of the median community wage, or at 100% plus full health benefits. And incidentally, those full health benefits are defined as whatever the city or the county, your choice, is offering. So they get basically the same high level of coverage, unless they're hiring those folks and maintaining them. Year by year, five new full-time people in that business. They don't qualify for any kinds of benefits under this package. So it has to be, it has to address the issue of the unemployment, and it has to address the issue of median wage. And we feel like this bill, tweaked in this way, really does that. So someone that just comes to town with a rental business with one or two employees just isn't going to qualify.
Well, I guess, Mr. Chairman, I was thinking someone comes with just five and has the rental business.
Mr. Chair, if someone came to town and built or remodeled, and Representative Hess, in relative to the question, if they came to town and built and or remodeled an existing business and made it into a rental business, something that wasn't competing with a business that was already there in existence, then it's a potential. If they will hire five full-time employees, paying them 150% of the median wage, and then continue to do so year after year, then chances are that passive income could in effect become income tax free based upon that investment. But remember, it has to be a new business to the community. Now, Mr. Chair, if I may, from my brief experience in the accounting field with regard to these multi-services, and we do have some of them in Eastern Oregon for storage kinds of activities, I think the largest one that we've ever had in Eastern Oregon, 200 or 300 units in a single facility with various kinds of levels of service, including some that have not just electricity but also water and sewer available to the small rental units. Number one, the employment level is very, very low and not full-time employment. And number two, the wage that they pay is typically minimum wage. This is which here in this particular instance really doesn't qualify. However, if they were willing to come to the community, commit that they would be willing to hire five or more full-time employees at 150% of the median wage, or 100% and pay them full health benefits, then potentially that rental income could be passive. However, it would have to be a very integrated and probably provide some additional services. But that's a good suggestion as to, you know, who might be able to modify their business. But paying 150%, I think it's going to blow most of them out of the water. And then they have to maintain that level in order to get the next year worth of income tax benefits. They have to recertify where the Department of Employment comes in and says, yes, you're still meeting the criteria of five full-time employees. And incidentally, five full-time employees probably means that you're going to have six or seven on your payroll. Because if one of them quits, then you don't have a full-time employee if you've only got five.
All right. All right. Thank you very much.
Thank you very much.
You bet. Good to see you again. Art Fish. From the department.
The department.
The department, yeah.
Thank you, Representative Shetterly, Chair of the House Revenue Committee, and members of the committee. My name is Arthur Fish with the Oregon Economic and Community Development Department, and I'm just here to provide you with some background on House Bill 2298 as engrossed, and just answer your questions. And so I'll just tell you what my little pieces here are, which have been modified as of late Friday from materials that we provided to the House Trade and Economic Development Committee. And the first thing on the front is just provides a little contrast comparison between the current situation under the bill that was passed in the 2001 session and what would occur with the enactment of a engrossed House Bill 2298. And as you see, right now, this tax abatement, which, you know, doesn't affect property taxes, and it's not a credit the company then applies to its income taxes, but it exempts the income associated with the qualified facility, just to be sure. And right now, a facility or business that would be eligible for this over 10 years would have to be located within the city limits of, if they applied today or whatever, were preliminary, they applied today, they would have to be in one of those cities on the left side. And then on the right side, you could see we would get quite a number of new places, and it would be those places both incorporate or both incorporated as well as within the urban growth boundaries, and then potentially other sites within the respective counties, because it's the county that becomes eligible. And so we get quite a few other towns, some additions here: Ontario, John Day, and a few others that certainly be very interesting. On the next page, this just gives you an idea of how the program determines, under the law, what counties are eligible for this in terms of their small cities. And you're really, again, looking for the current situation on the left side. And there we're just using the most recent annual data, and I apologize for some of the shading getting so dark. This comes out in color, but I can't print it in color. And so I'm going to need to adjust some of those colors, but for printing and then copying in black and white. But the four shaded counties that currently meet both requirements, the unemployment rate and the annual per capita income measure, which means they're in the worst nine or quartile of the state in both cases. And the current winners are Sherman, Morrow, Lake, and Crook County. And on the first page, you saw the towns within those counties, the incorporated towns. The bill would, for the per capita income measure, require not necessarily that you be in the lowest quartile, but that you be in the lowest one-third. And so that opens up a little more room for a few other places. But the fact that you need to meet both measures, is pretty significant, because there are some places with fairly low income but not so high unemployment, and vice versa, and they wouldn't make it into this program. Also, the changes would expand. In this, the department sees not so much as a way to that means more counties are eligible, but that the counties that are eligible stay eligible for a little while. One of the problems right now is that, we can go to Crook County and say, look, you're in this program, and, maybe this is something that, we can help businesses feel better about locating here. But, we can't promise that a year from now, they'll still be in, because one of these datas could change. It's not all that likely with income, but unemployment, even annual unemployment, does bounce around a little bit year to year. So if they're in the program today, we can say they're in it for the next 2 years after this year with these changes. So that provides some stability and more certainty to the people involved with economic development and businesses that might be looking at that location to feel that they don't need to rush anything today. They can let their plans play out a little bit, and we don't have to worry about the deadlines and so forth as stringently. And then finally, and of course interrupt me at any time, on the last page is just a little chart which provides a little bit of detail on some of the provisions that are being amended per the bill. And I could just go through basically the main six there, and it goes through, describes the current law on the left side. Next column describes specifically what is being changed. The next column provides perhaps a little background on that, and then finally line and page numbers. So with that, I either open it up to any questions you may have that I might try to answer, or I could go through those six things that are listed in the matrix there on the last two pages.
This kind of brings back, I remember from this bill, last session, that was the concern whether this is so complicated that it's also hard for people to get through to determine whether they're going to qualify. Can you help them through this? Somebody comes to you and says, I'd like to qualify for this?
Chair Shetterly, members of the committee. It is a bit complicated, especially on my end, to actually, you know, keep up on the data and, you know, figure this out. Once we know the locations, you know, we can kind of break down the issues. So you got the right location. We can determine that. We'll have a little more stability with the bill as far as, you know, knowing that somebody, you know, is in for a while. Then you just have a process. If somebody is in the right location, they can give us a preliminary application. The process then as goes to the local governments, and we have to give them 60 days in which to potentially object and nix the whole idea of this benefit, not in the project, but the benefit. And that would include, under the bill, port districts, if there is one. And I don't foresee that as happening very often because most of these counties currently are in eastern Oregon, so it would only be the Columbian counties where you might have a port that would potentially be involved along with a city or county. Then it really comes down to about only two or three basic requirements to the business for them to either figure out whether they qualify or whether for us to figure out. And that is, one, are you new, to the state? You're not doing anything else in the state and so forth. Two, will you hire enough people and pay them enough? Okay, and will you operate for the next 10 years? And then... trying to remember. I mean, it's basically comes down to that. And also, would you not compete locally? And then there we would look to the local city and county objection to basically clarify that. And then it's just a matter that one of the things that this bill would change that we think is fairly significant from a perspective of maybe a larger project. Okay, a larger project could have a lot more people than just five. Only the five would need to qualify per se, based on those requirements, but it could be much larger, and a larger project will take more time to build, or refab an existing building, for instance. The bill currently would say that once we've given them preliminary certification, they only have 6 months from that point, and hopefully we could process it with a local objection within 90 days. You know, the 60 days would be required, potentially, another little week or two here and there. But, you know, they're only looking at 6 to 9 months at most, which could be a fairly short time frame for a fairly large project if one of them actually was willing to use this program in one of these locations. This would give us the last row in the matrix, explains how under the bill they could get... it could be a little more variable. And, you know, if they're just acquiring something, it's a small operation, maybe 6 months is plenty, but, you know, it could take, you know, many of these projects, as we know from other programs, can take a good 2 years if they're sizable enough. So we wouldn't want to preclude the chance of a large project just by having the short window of opportunity in which they must begin operations.
Where's the new to Oregon language? Is it in this bill or is it in other statute that...
Chair Shetterly, members of the House Revenue Committee. Yeah, that's not really being changed by the bill.
Right.
So I guess it's not highlighted, but I have it here in the Ain Gross on page 3, lines 18 and 19. Excuse me. The business operations, the business firm that are being conducted at the facility constitute a new business that the firm does not operate at location okay. in the state. So,
okay, that's the new yeah. Oregon language.
Yeah, that, and that's a significant issue. I mean, we do have inquiries by companies that are already doing something, and we have to tell them that this is not not very helpful if, you know, they're already doing that.
And, you know, it's not a big issue, but just making sure how this works. If I wanted to incorporate or form a new LLC and then establish a business operation in one of these qualified communities, would that constitute a new Oregon business? Now we've got an entity that is a new entity.
That's a good question, Chair Shetterly, members of the committee. I would think if it's a new entity and it's not just doing. The language here is more of business operation. So it sort of says that they're doing something different. So, I mean, if it's something of a different enterprise and it's organized differently, perhaps, I think those two tests would be sufficient.
Not, I'm not sure. That, I don't think it's an objection. I mean, on the receiving end in the community, that's still five jobs and paying the wages and getting other benefits in the community. But I was just curious if you'd had occasion to think about that aspect of the qualification.
Yeah, I think if it's that distinct, I mean, because, you know, you could have investors and entrepreneurs that are involved in differing things, and you wouldn't want to, you may not want to necessarily preclude them just because they have some other involvement over here that's comparable but not the same. Yeah.
All right. Any other questions? Representative Berger.
I think it's more of a comment, but Art, you might like to offer what you think. Do you think that somehow we have been revived and that we really are going to work hard on how to get to yes in these processes?
Representative Berger, Chair Shatterly, members of the committee, we're working on it. We're still waiting to have an opportunity with this program to say yes. Frequently, my experience is, you know, we can say yes as quick as we can, you know, meet some of these requirements. And so that's where we're heading. And I don't feel this program is too onerous. It's just not, you know, it does have some constraints which limit its applicability. So there's not a whole lot that we can do for businesses that aren't going to go to these particular locations with respect to this program. But, you know,
Would you use the community solutions team process in a small area like this? In other words, if you get into a situation where it wouldn't necessarily be your department that would be holding back the business, would you bring in a community solutions team in a population with this criteria?
Representative Berger, Chair Shatterly, members of the House Revenue Committee. Yes, I would think if there are other issues that are perhaps complicating a business's use of one of, especially some one of these areas where clearly there are benefits available, and some of these areas are also enterprise zones, so there could be other incentives involved here that, you know, are, you know, that state policy has declared, you know, this is of interest. And I think, yes, the community solutions team process would be a great way that I'm aware of that our people work with transportation or land use people to, you know, remove those, you know, what would be really potentially the more significant issues for a company as far as really having a profitable investment.
Go ahead.
Now, I think if people haven't been involved in some of these processes, that they don't realize this. Any process that's laid out looks very, very simple until you get in it. Mm-hmm. And then the enterprise zone layer is there and the urban renewal, and there's an industrial zone, and here we go again, and it's, you know, rally around the flagpole because to get there is not that easy. And I think that unless we are willing somehow to make it a little bit easier for people who want to invest their money and hire people under this criteria where they pay what you're asking them to pay, or they're providing health benefits or so forth, there's got to be a little bit more of a tolerant level on the other side of the desk. I'm hoping with the economy the way it is, which was predictable, that we might be able to change our attitude a little bit and try to help them get to yes. But that's just my comment for the day.
Of course, the constraints in this are intentional. I mean, they're designed to try to focus development within particular distressed areas and not dilute the effect of the bill by opening it up to development in other areas of the state that aren't suffering the distress that some of these communities are. And that was the Representative Butler's intention from the very beginning, I think, was to draw this narrowly enough so that if someone was thinking about it and wanted to take the advantage of this, that it would draw them into one of these communities that is particularly distressed from either wages or high unemployment, too.
If I may, Chair Shatterly, members of the House Committee, that's true, and also the requirement of 150% of per capita income, and you can see some of those per capita income numbers there. 150% of them is not necessarily terribly high, but it's an issue, and it is a complication we have to deal with. And then with this bill, the other unknown that a company just has to bear with us on is the potential of a local objection, and we at least have to go through that process. But I would say with the benefits that we offer, you know, we've regardless of the economic times, have bent over backwards to try to, you know, provide the answers and smooth the requirements as we find in the law. But I would definitely agree with Representative Verger. There's just so many other issues that even a company that's not to receive any benefit or incentives might have to deal with to develop. I mean, real estate development is a very complicated issue, and then you add on to that all the other business regulations and so forth. It's not, that can't all be changed as we might wish at a moment's notice.
All right. Any other questions for Mr. Fish? Thank you very much.
You bet. My pleasure.
We have one more witness on this. Jessica Stevens. Jessica Stevens. Okay. Well, we have her hand up. Pardon? She wanted to testify? She did not want to testify. Okay. All right. Okay, Jessica Stevens from the Revenue Coalition.
Has her hand up.
Sort of a hit and run. Okay. All right. With that, we'll close the public hearing. We'll close the public hearing on House Bill 2298. Yeah. No, I was just thinking one more question, but I'll save it. And I guess let's get a make sure we have a revenue on this, and then we can take a look at it when that's done.
Okay.
Thank you very much. Close public hearing there. And now let's open public hearing on House Bill 2671 while Paul goes and gets Representative Girard. Mazin, why don't you give us the staff report on this one?
Excuse me. Mr. Chair, members of the committee, House Bill 2671 also comes to us via the Economic Committee and Trade and Economic Development. And the bill, in a nutshell, adds a fifth level of criterion to the tax exemptions that exists already in the law. The current tax exemptions are heavier on employment. Employment criteria basically having 75 employees by the certain year and maintaining a certain level of payment unless there is a less number of people in the county or in the city. So the emphasis is on the employment versus 20 million of investment. This fifth new criteria is a lot heavier on the investment criteria. It puts in the effect basically of 200 million as the total cost of the new facility. However, it shrinks down the amounts of and the numbers of employees that needed to be employed at the facility to 10, and those are with the same old criteria of 150% above the county annual average. Also, it keeps or it adds the geographical remoteness of the facility. The statement in the beginning of the bill that has about 19 pages. Excuse me. That's not a statement. 19 pages, that a book. 19 lines or so. In a way, it gives the at least the way I read it, is the philosophy or the direction of how and where this is coming from to go into the 10 full-time employees and the 200 million However, it also invokes or it talks about the statute or the ORS 317124, which is the income tax exemption statute. However, that is still in a way not clear how it will impact or how it will invoke it, since the exemptions on those that we're looking at today are still subject to the 1 million threshold of income tax, knowing that 10 employees at 110 and 150% of the average is probably not going to get that easily. And the 317-124 is not further amended to make those changes in that sense. So looking at that, I don't see a big impact for the income tax at this point as it stands, although that might not continue to be the case, whether those are starting to take effect or not. And the property taxes are exemptions are small or minimal, and so is fiscal impact. And of course, a discussion becomes of how much of 200 or 300 more million will generate, and for how long. And those are supposedly, of course, until the construction is over, which is not permanent in that sense. So we end up with the minimal fiscal impact, and as far as we could see now with all the other dynamic interactions of the system, still a minimal revenue impact at this point.
Okay. Well, while we are waiting for Representative Garrard, let's bring up our folks from Klamath County. Mr. Trotta, Mr. Studley, and I'm not sure of the... Thank you. Come on forward. Oh, and bring your friend with you. Good entrance.
Came
we just had the staff
thing.
Overview, so it's all yours.
Good morning, Mr. Chair, members of the committee. I'm State Representative Bill Garrard, District 56, Klamath Falls. The experts are sitting to my right. I can sit here and reiterate all the things that they will tell you, but I will simplify my statement simply by saying that this is very good for my district. It will create jobs, not only during construction, but after construction, and this has a definite positive economic impact on the residences of Klamath County and particularly the city of Bonanza. And with that, I will turn this over to Mr. Rob Trotta.
All right. Good morning.
Good morning, Mr. Chairman, members of the committee. My name is Robert Trotta. I'm a director of power generation for People's Energy Resources, and I am the project manager for the proposed Cobb Energy Facility. Speaking today in support of House Bill number 2671, as it looks to change the requirements for the long-term rural enterprise zone. I do understand that the long-term rural enterprise zone is a state general type of incentive that we offered, and it does not apply to a specific county or to a specific industry. But I'd like to speak today about how it can bring it from the conceptual to actually benefiting economic development and bringing investment into a community. I heard during the previous questions and testimony is, how do you make it easier? And how do we make a company be able to say yes? Well, and that was the intent of structuring this type of legislation. As someone that represents a business looking to make a substantial investment in your state, a bill like 2671 makes those steps. For the past, very brief overview, I'll keep it very short. For the past 2 years now, I have been managing and working with the Office of Energy and the East County of Klamath, as well as a multitude of state and federal agencies, to go through the permitting process within the state and within the federal government as to permitting a generating facility within your state. We're pretty far along the road now, 2 years, a lot of resources, a lot of time, a lot of dedication, that we feel that we're at a point that the project makes sense from an environmental, from a permitting perspective, and from getting the support of the members of the community. It makes sense. Now I look at the project as well. It's nice to make sense from a permitting perspective, but I need to make it make sense from the economics as well. We've been working with the state and with the county, and it looks like we do have, and they've offered up the enterprise zone to help bring this investment in. The enterprise zone does help, and it does provide some relief in taxes, but it's a very brief period of time, and it doesn't go as far as where it needs to go. I have developed projects like this throughout other areas of the United States, and it's not uncommon for an investment of this size, like a generating facility that is in the hundreds of millions of dollars, to offer incentives to bring this type of investment in as long as it meets the permitting standards. For example, you have cohorts in Pennsylvania where they offer a Keystone Opportunity Zone, which allows 15 years of a 100% state tax abatement for 15 years. You have the states of Missouri, you know, that do offer bonding that brings extensive benefits to the permitting. You have states like Illinois that have 10 to 15 year enterprise zones that bring investments. So we're not really asking you to reinvent the wheel here. We're just asking you to make it more to bring the impact more to home and to do what some of your neighboring states or states throughout the U.S. are doing to attract these types of businesses. To put this in perspective, it's kind of important to note a couple of things. We're trying to site this facility now. The land brings in today, if you round up to the thousands, $2,000 in property taxes. That's a contribution that this land brings in today to the county and to the state, being through state education. A project of this scope could be up to $700 million investment in the state. That comes down to about $80 million in union labor to construct. It takes over 23 months to construct a facility like this. It would employ over 457 tradesmen through its process of construction to build it. As far as permanent employees, depending on who operates it and what the end result would be as far as the size of the facility, we went with 10 because it's a safe number, because 10 is a number that I know a facility like this could qualify for. But realistically, you're probably looking anywhere from 10 to 35 full-time employees. Did an economic impact analysis, and the average salary for a facility like this is $85 million a year with burdens and benefits. We didn't. We, of course, before moving forward, did a very thorough economic impact analysis. Before I could come back and ask for anything, I wanted to prove that I was bringing a substantial investment. We did a economic impact analysis of this facility to the county specific. So not just it covers a lot more if you bring it outside the county, but just speaking specifics to the county, within the first 5 years of the facility moving forward, starting construction, the direct and indirect economic impact is to the tune of $469 million. So just in support of 2671, I just love the comments I heard before is, How do we make it easier, and how do we make it easier for a company to say yes? I can't guarantee that with this change that the investment will be there tomorrow. But what I can say is that it greatly increases the probability of the facility moving forward. Thank you.
All right. Thank you.
Mr. Chair?
Yes.
May I add just one statement to what Mr. Trotta just said? There is as this committee is most aware, electrical market rates are very risky business these days. This company doesn't have any guarantees that the market's going to produce any big profits or anything else in the years ahead. But this company is willing to commit itself to Oregon and to Klamath County and take that risk. And I believe that we need to share a portion of that risk in offering any kind of economic incentives we can. Thank you.
Thank you. Who's next?
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, my name is Trace, and I'm the executive director of the Klamath County Economic Development Association. Thank you for having me here. I would just like to echo what our representative and what Mr. Trotta have said. Andrew Studley and I have been working, and so has so many other people in Klamath County, for over 2 years with this excellent firm. We are fortunate in having an apex where big power lines and where big gas lines cross, and so that makes things of this nature possible. We do have one cogeneration facility in Klamath now, which won the governor's award for economic excellence about 3 years ago. This one, of course, is private market, and so, and that's the way the county chose to pursue its endeavors with power generation, which is, of course, a national priority also. It doesn't take too long of a memory to remember about a year and a half ago when we all came within inches, I think, of not having the power turned on when we turned the electrical lights on. Klamath County adopted in its official goals and objectives several years ago. Power generation is one of its key ingredients for economic prosperity. We had the option of working with several other power companies that were looking in the area. This is the one we chose because they had the proven track record and because of the personal integrity of not only that company but of Mr. Trotta. And we have found that to be one of the smarter things we've done in the last couple of years is hook up with a proven winner. I would like to note also from the last House bill that was up, some of the things that Rob did. It's how do we say yes is very difficult sometimes in a very rural part of a generally rural county. We have all of 64,000 people in Klamath County, but the vast majority of them live right inside or right around Klamath Falls, something like 59,000 of them. So going 20 miles out into Bonanza, that is a very small community that is limited in what kind of economic developments can be had there because of various other rules, regulations, zonings, overlays, all of this type of stuff. So we have been very desirous to do things, but the old rules of just 75 people in a community the size of Bonanza would be more like 1,000 people coming into Beaverston or Gresham or something like that. Proportionality was not there with the original enterprise zone here, so we do support that very much. And this would, obviously in a recession, this would really rock our world for a couple of years to have not only the builders for 2 years, but then the permanent employees and the taxes that come out of it and everything. So we are very much for this. Thank you very much.
All right. Thank you.
Mr. Chair, good morning. My name is Andrew Studley, and I'm Agriculture and Environmental Manager for Klamath and Lake County Economic Development District. And I am speaking on behalf in support of House Bill 2671 and the Cobb Energy Facility. Just to reiterate what Mr. Sen said, that Klamath County has designated power generation as one of its economic priorities. People's Energy and Mr. Trotta have spent a tremendous amount of time and money covering all aspects of development to ensure there is no negative impacts to transportation, livability, and environment, and more importantly, environment and natural resources. I just like to note one thing, that the proposed site for this facility is really a low productivity of ag lands due to marginal soils. So there will, I mean, they're not taking out any very productive ag land. And I think this in-depth due diligence and economic vitality that this project will bring warrants the EDD support. With the help of the state of Oregon, we can show that Oregon and the respective county are open for business. Thank you.
All right, questions then of this panel? Representative Hess.
Thank you. I want to rock the world here. If that's cool. This feels a lot like the strategic investment program, which made a lot of sense because none of those big semiconductor chip plants would have ever been built in my area had it not been for that. It just wouldn't have made sense. I guess my question is, I see the language here in that first section is that language just as you're building on, you're starting up? Is that what that language is all about?
Are you referring to 5A? Or are you
Section 1.
Section 1, okay.
For other criteria. Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. I apologize. I don't think I understand a question.
You want to save that motor economic development?
Yeah.
Since he's here and still available to testify. Well, Mr. Fisher, you've got time to study the bill. If you're ready to answer that question, when you come up. Other questions for these gentlemen? Representative Verger.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Now, welcome, Mr. Trotta. In your 2 years of working, trying to get a business into Oregon, that's going to benefit everybody. Can you give me, without any embarrassment to you or to me, can you give me just a feel for how you have pursued over the past 2 years, where you've been encouraged, what we've done right? In fact, we can leave out what we've done wrong if you're comfortable with more comfortable with that. But we need to know what we've done right, and I think we do things that are right. And certainly being environmentally sensitive is not a wrong. It is being careful as we go through. But I would like to just have a little bit of an assessment from someone that has a company your size that can benefit our state.
Chairman Shetterly, Representative Verger, that's a great question. And I think in looking forward and looking back and continuing looking forward, there's a couple ways that I think about this. And I speak with members of the state and Office of Energy on this regularly as how we're doing and grading ourselves and moving forward. I think the goal and the vision that the state has is to protect the environment and to protect the resources. And I believe that the process that they have in place to do that covers it from all angles. So if the intent is to ensure public safety and to ensure the integrity of the environment and to ensure habitats, the process that is set up today covers that thoroughly. And I do believe that, and if that is the intent, I believe you all are being successful. And I think that if that's the criteria stays that way, I think that everyone's going to be happy, and you're protecting, and what you're trying to protect will be successful. Where I think we need a little bit of tweaking, and this is what we're trying to do here now, is that when you get a facility or an investment like mine, or like my company's, that meets that criteria, it goes through that review, and from every angle makes sense. You know, and county wants it. It's in safe environmentally, protects habitats. When you go through that process, there should be things that criteria as far as the economics that then make it more feasible to bring it. And I think that we're going down a path, I think we're working with the state, that makes a lot of sense. So I'm looking forward to more successes, be able to talk about that.
May I help answer? Thank you, Mr. Chair, committee. It seems to me that going back to what the Representative Haas said, this is, I think, an incentive plan designed to help and maybe then really help now that we've found out what some of the challenges or some of the hurdles were. Small economic development areas with small employment opportunities, just as the larger ones were done for the chip makers and things like that. So yes, it's not exactly apples and apples, maybe more apples and oranges, but I think that's the intent, is how do we bring home a piece of the pie when there's not going to be somebody, for the most part, employing 1,000 or 500 or anything anywhere near that. But proportionally, it is 500 to us. It is 1,000 because that's just the proportionality of the counties. Representative Verger, to your question, I think some of the frustration is maybe a traditional continental divide of Oregon, the difference between the urban areas and the smaller areas. The frustration with us sometimes is the pondering of something, you know, what ifs, the giant over and over again what ifs that take quite a long time for people like Mr. Trotta, who are used to doing it in expediting facilities more expediently in other states. They come up to not a black or a white as much as a profound grayness or whiteout that really can be quite the challenge in the bureaucracy.
Yeah.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I think that for those in the state who have had businesses just to walk in and be welcomed, for those of us in some of the rural areas where we have had to take many, many things into consideration and have actually lost people like Mr. Trotta, who would have brought employment and financial security to families there, and whose families now suffer from hunger, unemployment, alcoholism, child abuse, and all the social ills. This is a very serious subject with me, and I think for businesses who are who do have a track record and who should be welcomed in our state should not necessarily be put through 2 years of hoops and constantly being asked, what if? If ifs was gifts, we'd all take a boat ride. So I welcome Mr. Trotta to here today to hear his comments. I know they're guarded, but I do believe that Oregon can hit a happy medium between welcoming business and protecting the environment, and I do not believe that we're there yet. So with those comments, I'll stop.
Mr. Chair, Representative Berger, we already have one cogeneration plant in Klamath. It's a partnership between the city of Klamath Falls and Pacific Power, and there are already at least one more cogeneration plant proposed in the Klamath area. Again, this primarily due to the proximity to, as Trey Sen referred to, the proximity to the crossroads of electric power for the entire West Coast, which runs right through Klamath Falls. What this bill, what this incentive is all about, is exactly what you're referring to, Representative Verger, and that is perhaps setting the model, clearing the way for not only this project, but perhaps many more, not only in our area of Klamath Falls, but in the state of Oregon. So I think what we do here today is extremely important in that respect, and that we are indeed sending a message. Thank you.
Senator Farr.
Thank you. I really applaud this bill. I think, we talk about the importance of improving the economy of the state. This is exactly the type of thing we need to move forward with. And I look forward to seeing things begin to happen in Klamath Falls. I just spent 8 years on the Eugene City Council fighting enterprise zones. I personally wasn't fighting them, but the majority of the council was, and a very small vocal minority in Eugene did everything it could possibly do to destroy a Hyundai semiconductor. I know we need to make it easier for companies to come into the state and easier for people to make the decision to invest in the economy of the state. Once again, this is a step in that direction. Thank you.
All right. Representative Berger.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. This is the second time through for me because this came through, and I am probably less polite as the representative from Coos Bay, because I asked Mr. Trotta this question before, and I'm going to repeat it for him right now, because he's been all over the country citing facilities such as this. Mr. Trotta, on a scale of 1 to 10, how would 1 being easy, 10 being difficult, how would you rate Oregon's permitting process in your arena?
Chair Shetterly, Representative Berger, I will answer the question the same way I did last time, is that the degree of difficulty, I would rate it as an 11 within the state of Oregon.
Thank you.
All right. Well, I guess on some level, I'd hope that being able to come to the legislature and get a good reception and get this passed out is a step in the right direction. On the other hand, it's a shame, I suppose, that you know you have to do that. Anyway, you're here, and I think the sense of the committee is to try to help you move this along, both for your benefit, but really speaking more parochially for Klamath County's benefit and the good folks that live in that area and need some jobs to support their economy. With that, are there any other comments or questions? Thank you, gentlemen. We have Mr. Fish. I think you're going to answer the question that was put to you. Is that right about Mr. Fish? You still with us? Okay, there you are.
Mr. Chair.
Yeah.
In response to Representative Berger's comment about, I think it was if ifs were skiffs.
We'd all take a boat ride.
And in honor of Mr. Fish, I'd say that if wishes if wishes were fishes, we'd all have a fry. So.
Not bad for a Monday.
Oh my. Chair Shetterly, members of the House Revenue Committee, Representative Williams, thank you. With a lead-in like that, I'm more than ready to, you know, and I'll be here all week, of course. Again, my name is Arthur Fish with the Oregon Economic and Community Development Department, and here I can refer to myself as the Enterprise Zone Coordinator, and I'm more than happy to answer your questions. Again, I'll just remind you that there are there is sort of our regular kind of standard enterprise zone benefit that is available in places. A company comes in, invests, you know, new property, and that new property is allowed not to be taxed for property tax purposes for 3 and up to 5 years, 3, 4, or 5 years. And there's some requirements there, but you know, it's pretty doable, and there's hundreds of businesses use it. I think Mr. Trotter was referring to that before when he said it didn't go far enough, long enough, as compared to some of their experiences. The other program is the long-term rural tax incentive, and I say tax incentives because that involves both an exemption, again, on a facility from property taxes here longer term, 7 to 15 years, and that's decided by the local level. And the decision at the local level there is fully discretionary, whereas the 3-year exemption is a rather automatic process in many cases. And I say incentives because in addition to the property tax exemption or exemption from property taxes, there could be a tax credit with this program subject to gubernatorial approval. That can get very complicated. The materials I provided are available on our website. The chart gets a little technical, but it answers the question of what size of business. So if you're in the right kind of enterprise zone, which are marked on the map and with a green with a triangle, those enterprise zones with a triangle, and there's most of the non-urban enterprise zones have this program available to them, but not all. And I'll be talking about that this afternoon in this very room, I suspect. But many of them do because they meet sort of unemployment or income criteria in a unfavorable sort of way that allows an enterprise zone in that county to be eligible for this to offer the long-term benefits. And indeed, the Klamath Falls enterprise zone is definitely in that category. And here's a little background on that and. The main requirements are that if you're in such an enterprise zone to get these long-term benefits, besides being locally approved with a local written agreement, and there it is comparable to the strategic investment program. This program began; it was sort of inspired by the Nucor investment of 1997, which unfortunately never came to pass. The law at the time was much severe. You had to invest at least $100 million. And I give you this history because I think it is fairly informative for this. You had to invest $50 to $100 million and at least 100 jobs. Okay. For Nucor at the time, that was much lower than they needed. That was going to be a huge facility. But, you know, we want to make sure it was at least conceivable that this could be used in other places if so desired. And in 1999, the legislature chose to provide some sliding scale provisions. The sliding scale provisions allowed for the minimum investment amount and the minimum job creation to vary depending upon location, and generally to bring them much lower. They can be usually as high as $25 million, but in some places the minimum investment is only a few million dollars. So when we're talking about the People's Energy Plan at $200 million, that's a very, you know, they're saying they're going to meet that target. That's very significant compared to the current program. The job numbers is pretty low for at least Klamath County, where you would need under this program at least 50 new jobs. So that's sort of the trade-off. Big, you know, and what we're doing here in Section 1 of the bill, and I would certainly asked for Representative Haas's indulgence to restate his question so I might more specifically address it. But in the Section 1 are just listed the kind of the various options that allow a company to meet certain requirements as far as, you know, the size of the county and distance from I-5 and the other things that legislators asked us or worked with us to develop as sort of a way to provide some flexibility out there so that we weren't trying to one-size-fits-all type of approach, because what Wallowa County can do versus Douglas County, and Douglas County is the only place where this program has been used so far. There's a facility in Riddle, which has been very successful. It arguably should differ. And here we're sort of making a difference or proposing a difference vis-a-vis sort of a particular aspect of the industry. Huge capital investment, not necessarily a large workforce per se, in terms of a permanent workforce. So with that, I just ask if Representative Haas would see if I can't better address this question.
Thank you. I apologize for asking the question in kind of an uncoordinated way, but that's based in the fact that I don't understand what Section 1 fully does. I see Section 1.5, the bold language, which is the new bill that has the $200 million threshold, and but what does the first part of Section 1 apply to, and what does it strive to accomplish?
Chair Shetterly, members of the House Revenue Committee, Representative Haas. Section 1, which is just one statute out of maybe half a dozen that define this program, is the one. It solely contains all the kind of requirements that a facility, the minimums that a facility has to meet. One minimum, so you have there four current subsections, and then you will add another. But the first subsection is sort of the highest level. That's where, if you can meet that, you can meet them all. That's the highest number of jobs, which is 75. There's a few counties where that applies that are along I-5, where you have to hire at least 75. Linn County, where this actually applies right now, and Douglas County, at least along the I-5 corridor, would require 75 jobs and up to $25 million, or 1% of the total taxable income property in the county, which for Douglas and Linn County, for instance, does bring you to 25. The next couple sections provide that, you know, the job number can be lower if your population is lower, and if you're beyond 10 miles of I-5, then the number can be lower than 75. It can go down to 50, and you can start operating at just a 0.5% of the total taxable income in the county. And that's where, so basically those four subsections determine this chart. So if you're looking at Gilliam County, and again, the average annual pay compensation is very high with this program. You have to compensate, including benefits, your employees at 150% of the county average annual wage. And so you can see some of those numbers, you know, that would be the average for all workers at the facility. That's probably the most significant hurdle in this program, to be honest. But if you go across from Gilliam County, you know, if you're going to be compensating in the order of $39,000 per person, you only need to invest as little as $1.35 million. I mean, it's not necessarily a huge facility. And then because that's group four at the least, you know, it's only 10 people. But if you look at, say, Sweet Home. Okay, the Sweet Home Zone would be in our Valley group. It's there, down there under Valley. Again, the wage, the compensation level is higher. Linn County has a higher annual wage. About the least you could do is invest at least $25 million and hire at least 75 people. So that's sort of the variance that you can get, and you can check across here. And you have, in a sense, two options, but if you can use option B, it's usually, it's almost always going to be better. But you can only use option B if you're more than 10 miles from I-5. And the idea being there, of course, you know, if you're really within close contact to I-5, it's a far more advantageous site regardless. Klamath Falls, you can see there, is where that would be in our central corridor. And that is, again, 40,000. And I believe the people that would work, the 10 or so or whatever it would be at the People's Energy Plant, would be paid well in excess of this, actually, given the nature of that work. But you're looking at least having to invest $18.5 million. And but that's, you know, and obviously they can meet that, but they can't hire 50 people under the current law. So, you know, this provides an alternative to this, which sort of says, well, if you're going to invest huge amounts, I mean, $200 million is a lot, then, you know, and again, this is pretty much, I think, focused on the idea of an energy facility, which is a very attractive thing in many areas, and they are long-lived assets, to be sure. So that's also something to take in mind when you consider the long-term character of this incentive.
If I could just...
Yes, sure. Mm-hmm.
So wouldn't they be able to qualify under any of the existing law? Where's the new... I guess I'm confused.
Well, they could, actually, if they were in some place where, say, the 10-job requirement applied. Mm-hmm. That would be...
That'd be... Let's look at... current law sub 3,
mm-hmm.
Sub 2, I guess, that's lines 16 through 28 on of the bill. But I think what gives the problem there is 10 full-time employees. This is in lines 21 through 24, 10 full-time employees, but it has to be in a county of a population of 10,000 or fewer, or they have to have 35 and be in a county of a population of 40,000 if you're nice, and that's where the problem comes in. Too many people in Klamath County and not to qualify under the first one, and 35 is more employees than they will be hiring to qualify under the second.
Yes. Chair Shetterly, members of the House Revenue Committee, that is the case. Klamath County has more than 40,000 people. It's one of our larger counties, and the idea there in the 1999 session was that we only go as low as 10 in places like Sherman, Gilliam, Wallowa, Lake County, and Morrow County was in that category, but they've now crossed, I think, the 10,000 threshold. Those are places where 10 jobs, regardless of how much you're investing, would be more significant than, say, in Klamath Falls or some other place where, again, you have to remember the time this was done. This was 1999, before, you know, when we're really trying to focus on rural areas, and these are areas that I think in the best of times are when we really can hopefully achieve best results for them, not necessarily the kind of times we've had since that since that fateful legislation that did, I think, make this program a whole lot more workable than it was originally in the sort of aftermath of the new core issues.
Thank you.
So this bill just creates a new entry,
yes,
to this rural enterprise.
A new trade-off of criteria.
Yeah.
Yeah. Exactly. Thank you.
And this may be the only facility that ever qualifies for it, but it's still $200 million in jobs for Klamath County. So.
Well, yes, it may be, Chair Shirley Mayor. But I could see other energy facilities,
sure.
Or they might use the strategic investment program or other things. So, you know, there are other options.
One question, sure. I had just in relation to the first bill that we heard this morning, looking at your map, this would not qualify, though, for the income tax exclusion under House Bill 2298. It didn't look like Klamath County comes under that.
That is correct, Chair Shetterly, members of the House Revenue Committee. Even with the changes proposed in the other bill, it would not.
Okay. All right. Anything else for Mr. Fish? Thank you very much.
Well, thank you.
Are there any other witnesses that would like to testify on House Bill 2671? For the record, I think that the sheet that was distributed by Ms. Stevens was intended for House Bill 2671 as well as for House Bill 2298, so we'll acknowledge that as being received for the record. Anybody else here in the room wish to testify? If not, I'll close the public hearing on House Bill 2671, and I'm going to go out on a limb and suggest that it's probably safe to go to a work session on this and open a work session on House Bill 2671. I take it, Mazin, there are no amendments required to move the bill forward.
No, Mr. Chair.
All right.
Mr. Chairman,
Representative Verger.
House Bill 2671 to the floor with a due pass recommendation.
Representative Verger moves House Bill 2671 to the floor with a due pass recommendation. Trying to get this on its way so you can get down to the Senate and finish your work down there before too long. Is there any discussion on the motion? Okay, please call the roll.
Representative Verger.
Aye.
R.
Aye.
Pass.
Aye.
Hobson.
Aye.
Scott.
Aye.
Merger?
Aye.
Williams?
Aye.
Chair Shevlin?
Aye. House Bill 2671 goes to the floor with a due pass. And I think what I'll do, let's ask Representative Girard to carry this.
Yeah.
That'd be worthwhile, giving him a chance to carry his county's bill. All right. So with that, close the work session on House Bill 2671. And committee, we are adjourned.